Hare Krishna. How many of you have come for the first time? And for how many of you is this the second or third time? Okay. Well, maybe we'll begin by asking you if you have any questions. I won't answer them one at a time, but I'll just get a general sense of what questions you have. Need volunteers? Yes?
I see some of the actual practitioners, the Hare Krishnas, here.
Yes.
And they have something so bright about them. So shiny. And I was just wondering, what do you have to do to get that?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
A good question. Any other questions?
How do you find out exactly where your purpose is? Beyond being Hare Krishna, your career, who you're supposed to be helping.
Okay.
Just talk a little bit about the difference between the Hare Krishna movement and more traditional Indian Vedanta.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just some comments on it or your opinion on it. Mm-hmm. It seemed like I learned quicker through the Hare Krishna movement than most other movements, but it seems like there's kind of another bigger, other things in Vedanta that Krishna, that Hare Krishna doesn't address or kind of does it in its own way.
Kind of a big question. Can you repeat the last part?
Well, I'm just curious about the difference between the more traditional Vedanta, the stuff I read is pretty just naive, but I see it repeated again in the Hare Krishna movement, usually more succinctly, like diet and Ayurveda, for example. Is the only source for this type of knowledge through Krishna, or can it be acquired outside of Krishna? Does that make sense? I mean, there's a lot of stuff I've read outside of it that doesn't, if nothing, Krishna movement is against it, it just doesn't address it sometimes, and yet it's traditional Indian. Does that make sense? Kind of how does the Hare Krishna movement fit into that is probably what I'm asking. Does it play the role of evangelical and Christians, or is there even a way of characterizing
that? Yes, in a way.
Yeah, for example, Gujarat, you see worship of Krishna and Rajasthan, but you don't see the ISKCON movement particularly. Yeah, I guess what I'm really asking is what role does ISKCON play in that other than just worshipers of Krishna?
Are there any other questions?
How can one take the joy into envy that's found here into the rest of the time and the space that we occupy outside here?
That's a very good question. Any other questions? Is this your first time here?
No.
So, we'll start at the beginning of something that has no beginning. The Vedanta Sutra begins, Atato Brahma Jigyasa Janmadeyasa Yataha. Atato means therefore, and in particular it means now that you have come to the human form of life, you should inquire into the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is defined Janmadi Asya Yataha as that from which everything emanates. And the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the same line, Janmadi Asya Yataha. So what is that from which or from whom everything emanates? This is a very important question because according to the origin of ourselves and everything else, we can understand the purpose of our existence. So Srimad Bhagavatam explains in detail that that from which everything emanates is conscious and is all-knowing, is conscious of everything, directly and indirectly, and is Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikaveye, and he imparted knowledge in the heart of Brahma, who is the, you could say, creator of the universe, secondary creator of the universe. Now, that person is identified as Krishna. Now, because we are conditioned in the material world, we are, our experience of persons is of conditioned souls who are limited and whose bodies are temporary. So when we hear that the absolute truth, or that the origin of all that is a person, we have difficulty because our experience of persons is like the people in this room, limited and temporary. But Krishna is neither limited nor temporary. We are limited in the sense that we can be in only one place at a time. If we're here in Dallas, we cannot at the same time be in Houston or New York or London or Bombay. But Krishna is a person, but he's simultaneously in Dallas, Houston, New York, London, Bombay. He's within every atom. He's within the space, within the atoms and between the atoms. He's everywhere. And in the material world, everything has a beginning and an end. Everything material has a beginning and an end. But Krishna is eternal, and eternal means without a beginning and without an end. And the Bhagavad Gita, which is the basic textbook of yoga, explains that we, living beings, also have no beginning and no end, because we are eternal, fragmental parts of Krishna. So that means, nahanyate anyamane sarire, that when the body dies, we, the atma, the soul within the body, does not die. We can also understand this fact by applying logic and reason. According to the Bhagavad Gita, consciousness is the energy of the Atma. And the Atma is located in the region of the heart. But the consciousness is spread throughout the body. Just like the sun is located in a certain position, but the sunshine pervades the sky. So, my consciousness pervades my body. I am conscious of the pains and pleasures within my body. But I'm not conscious of the pains and pleasures in your body. But Krishna is conscious of the pains and pleasures within everybody. And that is the difference between the individual consciousness of the Atma or Jivatma and that of the Supreme Consciousness or Paramatma. It is our natural function to serve the complete whole. It's always such that the function of the part is to serve the whole. For example, my hand is part of my body. So the hand is meant to serve the body. If it is not engaged in serving the body, it's diseased, paralyzed, something wrong. So because we are part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, we are meant to serve the Supreme Soul. And if we are not engaged in service to the Supreme, we are in a diseased condition. And in fact, pretty much everyone in the material world is in a diseased condition. Because we come into the material world because of our failure to or refusal to act in our constitutional position as eternal servants of Krishna. So Krishna consciousness is the original consciousness of the living being before he comes into the material atmosphere. And the process of bhakti yoga, which we practice, is meant to revive or awaken our original consciousness. And when our original consciousness is awakened, we realize that we are not the body, that we have nothing inherent to do with the body or with the material world, but we are part and parcel of Krishna. And our real relationship is not with the body or the material world, but with Krishna. And when we awaken to our Krishna consciousness, we become happy and satisfied. There is one story, story means history, related in Srimad Bhagavatam about a young boy of 5 years of age. Jamuna, how old are you? How old? Six?
Eight.
Eight? Uh-huh. And I forgot your name. How old are you? From Phoenix?
Seven.
And how old are you?
Eight.
Eight. Okay. So this boy was five. And his father was a king. And in that culture, a king could have more than one wife. He had two. So the boy Dhruva was playing on the lap of his father, who was sitting on the throne as the king. And the king's co-wife, not Dhruva's mother, became very angry that Dhruva was sitting on the throne, on the king's lap on the throne. And she dragged him off of the throne, off of his father's lap, and said that you cannot sit on the throne because you were not born from my womb. And the king, due to his excessive attachment to that co-wife, said nothing in protest. Although within his heart he felt bad, but because of excessive attachment and weakness, he said. So Dhruva went home to his mother and told her what happened. and asked if she could help. And she said, "My son, I cannot help you, because your father favors his other wife." They said, "Well, then who can help me?" And she said, "I think only God can help you." They said, "Well, where can I find God?" She said, "Well, many sages and saintly persons go to the forest to find God. So maybe you can find him there." So, at the age of 5, he left home and went to the forest, and he was looking for God in the way of a child. He was looking in the bushes, looking behind logs, looking under rocks. And God, who is in the heart of every living entity, understood that this boy is very eager to find me. And this is a principle, or a truth, that when God sees that someone is eager to find him, he helps. So God helped by sending Dhruva, a spiritual master. God, from within the heart of a pure devotee named Narada, informed him that the boy Dhruva is in the forest and you should go to him. He's looking for him. You should go to him. So Narada went, and he tested Dhruva. This is also part of the process that the Guru Krishna, through the Guru, will test the candidate. So Narada said, "You're only 5 years old. At your age, children play and have fun. So you should go home and you should play with the other children. Don't take it so seriously that your stepmother insulted you and said that you would not be allowed to sit on the throne because you were not born of her womb. So you should go home. And later, if you still have the desire, you can come to the forest to look for God." Dhruva replied that your instructions are very proper, but unfortunately, I cannot follow them. I want to find God now. And if you can help me find God now, I will welcome your help. But if you're going to tell me to go home, then you can go." And Narada understood that this candidate is very serious, and he gave Dhruva mantra with the holy name of God, and instructions on how to live his life and chant a mantra. And within maybe 6 months, Dhruva became so advanced in chanting the mantra and following the other instructions given to him by Narada that God came. Krishna came. And Dhruva was overwhelmed with ecstatic love on seeing the Lord, and the Lord touched him on the head, and thus Dhruva was able to offer many beautiful prayers to the Lord. So then Krishna asked Dhruva to accept some benediction. And Dhruva replied that I don't want any benediction, I only want to serve you. And the Lord replied, but what about your kingdom? You came to the forest and performed austerities to realize me in order to get your kingdom. And Dhruva replied that kingdom was like a piece of broken glass compared to you. And you, I have found the most valuable jewel. So, Swamin Kritartha Sni Varam Niyachetna. My Lord, I am completely satisfied, and I have no other desire. I do not desire any benediction. So this is the value of Krishna consciousness, that when one attains Krishna consciousness, he is fully satisfied, and he does not want anything else. No more hankering, no more cheating, no more pocketing, no more stealing, fully satisfied. There's another story, history, about Alexander the Great, who was conquering and going everywhere and conquering. And eventually he came to the precincts of India. And he found a yogi who was sitting in meditation in the middle of the day in the hot sun. And he was very impressed. So he got down and he approached the yogi. And he said, you know, I'm Alexander the Great, the conqueror of the world, and I'm very impressed by you. And I'm ready to give you anything you want. Just ask me, just tell me what you want. And the yogi replied, I just want you to move aside because you're blocking the sun. Then Alexander was even more impressed, and he sent letters or messages back to his generals who were following behind him, that these people here are very special. Don't mess with them. So, this is real happiness, this is real satisfaction. You have nothing to gain from anyone, because you're getting everything from Krishna. And you have nothing to lose at the hands of anyone, because nobody can take Krishna away from you. Nobody can take Krishna consciousness away from you. So you are equipoised. You have nothing to gain and nothing to lose, because you already have whatever there is to gain, and it cannot be taken away from you. So this is the greatest service to ourselves and to others, to give them something that is so great that once receiving it, they want nothing else. There's nothing more to want, to desire. So this process, in essence, the process that Dhruva Maharaj followed is the same process that we follow. But in a way that we can follow, we don't have the capacity to go into the forest and perform austerities like Dhruva. But we do have the capacity to chant mantra with the holy name of Krishna, following other instructions related to the chanting. And we can also realize God and experience the same benefit. So, just to explain a little about the chanting, because God is absolute, His name and He are the same. In the material world, or the relative world, the name of a thing and the thing are different. For example, if I'm thirsty, if I'm in the desert, and if I chant water, 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 chanting water, 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 water will not quench my thirst, because the word water and the substance water are different. But in the absolute realm, or the spiritual realm, the name and the substance are the same. So when we chant Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna is actually present, dancing on your tongue. And because Krishna is all pure, by chanting with attention, Chaito Garpano Marginam, our hearts become purified. All the dirty things within the heart become cleansed. And what do we mean by dirty things? What does the verse mean? Dirty things means our ignorance, our illusion, thinking that I'm the body, and everything related to the body is mine, because we're not the body. And nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to Krishna, because He's the origin of everything. And when we come into this false identification with the body, we think that we are the enjoyers, we are the controllers, we are the proprietors, and actually Krishna is the enjoyer, he is the proprietor, he is the controller. So when we give up that false identification, that false ego, then we can come to our real identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. And then we are peaceful and satisfied. And it's very easy. We did it at the beginning of the program. The chanting is very easy and very pleasurable. And that is the most essential process for realizing ourselves and realizing God. Yes.
The prayer beads that I've been using since I started doing mantras, they actually just broke this Monday. I was wondering if I should just start using a new pair, or like a new set, or try and fix the old ones, because I know they do, it's considered like your connection with God. Like, the prayer beads are kind of like a medium to connect with God.
Yes, that's a very important point. There are actually two ways of chanting. I mean, chanting is chanting, but one way is singing with musical instruments and melody, and the other way, that's called kirtan, and the other way is called japa, that is chanting quietly, just loud enough for you to hear yourself chant. I mean, it can be loud enough for others to hear. But it's mainly loud enough for you to hear. And as I mentioned earlier, it is a type of meditation. Meditation means to fix the mind on the object of meditation. And so to help fix the mind during the soft chanting, we have these beads. And while we're chanting, we like turn the beads between our fingers, and this engages the sense of touch. The idea is that the more the senses are engaged, the more the mind becomes fixed. So by chanting on the beads, we're engaging the sense of touch. And of course, we are hearing the mantra, so we're engaging the sense of hearing. And if two senses are firmly engaged, then the mind can be fixed. And as a regular practice, we chant a certain number of times, and in addition to engaging the sense of touch, the beads also allow us to count how many times we've chanted. And it's like exercise, you know, push-ups or sit-ups. People keep track of their repetitions because that's how they build up their strength. So our spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada, set the minimum number of 16 times around, and each round has 108 beats, so that means 108 mantras. as the minimum for initiated disciples. But very few people begin straight away with 16. But they can come. They can begin with one round or two or four. And by adhering to that minimum, they build up their spiritual strength, and then they can increase and eventually come to 16, or even more than 16. Yes.
So as long as the beads have 108 beads, it's okay to chant them? Like if you use a broken pair of drop of beads, but still chant the 16 rounds on them, is it okay? Does it still like give you the spiritual benefit?
Well, as, what is your name?
Ashton.
Ashton.
Mm-hmm.
As Ashton said, the beads are our connection with Krishna. It's really the chanting that's our connection with Krishna, but the beads are part of the chanting, so they're our connection with Krishna. And so we want to take care of our beads very carefully. And yes, temporarily, as long as you're chanting 108, it's all right. But we don't want to keep broken beads. We should either restring them or get a new set. Because we want our attention to be on Krishna, on the mantra, not like fiddling around with the beads and trying to make sure that we're completing the proper number. We want to keep it simple. We can focus on Krishna. Yes?
Does the type of beads matter? Do you know, like sandalwood or tulsi or rosewood? So I know in the ISKCON movement we normally use tulsi, but is that the specific standard, or is that just, can we use other beads to chant on?
You can use other beads, but tulsi is a very sacred plant dear to Krishna. And so there's added benefit if you chant on tulsi. But what I have got from the way you phrased your question and the way this gentleman phrased his question, there's a lack of clarity on what the origin of this knowledge is. I mean, we discussed that the origin of everything is Krishna. And so he's also the origin of this knowledge. ISKCON is an organization that is meant to facilitate the education of people in the knowledge. But there's nothing in ISKCON that Srila Prabhupada made up. He is presenting what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what he said in the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, and before that, millions of years earlier. So, you know, there is a book called The Nectar of Devotion. That's the translation of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. And the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was compiled about 500 years ago by Srila Goswami, who was a direct disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's actually Krishna, in the role of a devotee. But all of the principles that he enunciates in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu are supported with quotations from various sacred texts that are thousands of years old. So this is a very important and basic principle that we don't make up anything new. We simply repeat the perfect instructions that have come to us from Krishna through the cyclic succession and through the Vedic literature. So, you said in ISKCON we chant on Tulsi. It's not in ISKCON. Any devotee of Krishna will chant on Tulsi beads. This is not something from ISKCON or from me or Nityananda Chandra or Srila Prabhupada. Yes.
I was wondering if the Vedic literatures refer to anything about like spirits that still linger the earth, kind of like ghosts, for lack of a better word, and if they're if they're good or bad or anything.
There are ghosts, but what is the significance?
Like, do the Vedic literatures talk about them?
Yes.
And then, like, is there anything like, what do they do? And what do the Vedic literatures say about them?
I could answer your question, and but to really answer it properly and in detail would take some time. Maybe next week. I'm not sure if it's, but next week I could read a verse that mentions ghosts.
That'd be cool.
And we can have we can have an elaborate discussion of ghosts.
Are ghosts the street people of the spiritual world? They haven't connected back.
Yeah, they're not in the spiritual world.
But they're not quite in this world either.
Well, they are, but all right, I guess I can just give a very brief answer. So we discussed that there's the body and then the atma. The body is material and the atma is spiritual. And then there's the parama. So the body is actually composed of two types of matter. This is in the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. There's gross matter, which is, you know, solids, liquids, gases. And then there's subtle matter, which is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. And then beyond the subtle matter is the Atma. Now, when the soul leaves the body, it doesn't die. It continues to exist. And what happens to it when it leaves the body? Well, that depends on our activities during our life and our thoughts at the time of death. And it's described that the subtle body carries the soul to the next gross body. Because when we die, we leave behind the gross body, but the subtle body, our mentality, stays with us and accompanies us into the next body. and there are 8,400,000 species of life. And one will get a body according to his karma and his thoughts at the time of death. Now, a ghost is a living entity that has a subtle body, but no gross body. And how someone becomes a ghost, generally, it can happen in one of two ways. One, from committing suicide. Suicide means, in effect, that you don't want a gross body. And, you know, God is very kind. He fulfills the desires of the living entity. So if the living entity commits suicide, means he doesn't want a gross body. But he has only a subtle body. But he has gross material desires. Generally, someone will commit suicide because he has material desires that are frustrated. So out of frustration or disappointment, he commits suicide. So in the body of a ghost, he's even more tormented because he has all the material desires, but he doesn't have a physical body with which to fulfill them. Therefore, ghosts try to possess other people's bodies so they can fulfill their gross desires through someone else's gross body, because they don't have a gross body.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What do you mean by crazy?
It's just like spooky.
No.
It's
cool.
Spooky.
Never explained like that before.
Okay, so I'll just explain the other case in which someone could become a ghost. And that is when someone is very attached to something inanimate. Like you've heard of like haunted houses, like castles, big mansions. So the owner of the mansion or the castle, if he's like so attached to that building, so at the time of death, he might be thinking of his castle or his mansion. You can't take birth. It's not one of the forms of life, a castle. It's not a species of life. So he can't get the body of a castle, but he can live as a ghost in the castle. And that's why many castles are known to be haunted by ghosts, because their owners are so attached to them, they die thinking of their castle, and then they come back as ghosts.
Are they spent that way forever, or do they eventually get a body?
They can get a body. In fact, there are things that we can do to help ghosts. And the main thing that we can do to help any living entity in any condition is to chant the holy name. Chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And it happened in the history of the movement that there were some very big properties that were haunted, and they were available cheap because people didn't want to buy a haunted mansion. So the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, and he said, you can buy it, and if you do kirtan, then the ghost will go away. So we've got these big properties for a low price.
You know, Kalachandra is one of those properties.
And by hearing the chanting, it will create a situation that's favorable for the ghost to get a body and then, you know, lead a normal life again. Well, this was a church. I suppose there could be haunted churches, but we would hope in a godly place like the church is very good. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be haunted by ghosts.
My friend Diana came here for the first time a long time ago, and she snuck in, like, she walked in the temple room with her friends without seeing anybody from the temple. And she said she saw Srila Prabhupada blink, and then she thought he was a real person. And then she met Chandra later on, and he was like, oh no, that's a statue. And they were like, oh.
The same thing happened to me. I thought he was real. You know, I was like, oh, I'm going to go up and say hi after. But yeah. But I realized that it's
yeah, it's very life. Yeah. And very he is life. Real.
He's a real person. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was in Bombay for many years and had the same kind of deity. And people would just gather around and they'd like talk among. When's he going to speak? I wanted to know when he was going to give the lecture.
What was Prabhupada's personality like? I assume he met him and knew him.
Yes.
Can you just speak a little bit of what he liked as his person?
Yeah. But let me just say one more thing about this principle of parampara, descendant succession. I alluded to it, but... So, what made Prabhupada there, part of his qualification, or, you know, an essential part of his qualification was to have a spiritual master. You can't just, come out of nowhere and proclaim yourself to be a spiritual master. So, one who is a spiritual master has learned from his spiritual master. He repeats what he learned from his spiritual master. And so, and Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master had his spiritual master. And his spiritual master had his spiritual master. And there was a chain like that that went all the way back to Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything, is the origin of perfect knowledge, and he's the original spiritual master. So basically, we are all representing Krishna, or more specifically, our spiritual master, who's representing his spiritual master, who's representing his spiritual master, all the way back to Krishna. And Krishna has all good qualities. And so a pure devotee of Krishna, he also has all the good qualities of Krishna, but in a minute quantity. This is Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is Achintya Veda Vedatva. Inconceivably, simultaneously one and different. We are one in quality with God, but different in quantity. As Srila Prabhupada would say, God is infinite and we are infinitesimal. So, Srila Prabhupada, he manifested all those good qualities of Krishna. Every pure devotee manifests the good qualities of Krishna. And, you know, his spiritual master, it's worth studying. I mean, there's a book that I recommend called Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, it's the biography of Srila Prabhupada. There have been many accounts written about Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita is unique in that it covers his entire lifetime. And from that book you can get a sense of not only him, but also his spiritual master and other close predecessors. Because much, you know, much of what he showed to us is, are things that he imbibed from his own spiritual master. But ultimately they are all qualities of Krishna, but they're just manifest in a certain way to show mercy to the fallen souls, to reclaim the fallen souls. It would be worth, if you want to know, it would be worth reading the Srila Prabhupada. Did you have your hand up?
I did.
Yes?
You answered.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes?
Earlier when you were talking about things like suicide, things like that, I was wondering, what necessarily, is there any difference in what happens to you after you die, depending on the way that you die? Like, I mean, I know that reincarnation is based on, like, good karma, bad karma, or lack of karma, but I was wondering if there is any change in what happens, like, let's say you die very quickly opposed to a slow death, maybe to disease or old age. Is there any difference in what happens?
Not per se, but everything that you do or everything that you experience affects your, well, it was very interesting you said good karma, bad karma, no karma. I think I should explain that a little for people who aren't familiar with those concepts. So there's three words in Sanskrit, karma, akarma, and vikarma. So karma means material activities performed within the injunctions of the Vedas. So in a way you could call that good karma. And akarma means activities that do not bring any material reaction. Because any material reaction, whether good or bad, means that you have to take birth again. And whatever kind of body you get, you will suffer. You know, every living entity within the universe suffers. Janma, mritu, jara, vyadi. The pangs of birth, disease, old age, and death. You know, it doesn't matter if you're born as a prince or as a pauper. When you suffer disease, it's the same. It's no different being a prince or being a pauper. So, karma means, you could say, permitted activities. And vikarma means prohibited activities. And akarma means transcendental activities. There's no reaction. Transcendental activities means activities done for Krishna in bhakti yoga. So, vikarma, you will suffer, and, but in any case you suffer, other than the material world you suffer. But if you do vikarma, you might suffer as a pauper. If you do karma, you might suffer as a prince, but you'll suffer. But as a devotee who engages in transcendental activities for the pleasure of the Lord, he doesn't have to take birth again to suffer either the results of karma or vikarma. And with most people, it's a combination. And therefore, our lives are a combination of pleasure and pain. But it's only through transcendental activities. There's no more rebirth, and no more suffering.
What happens to your consciousness when you aren't reborn again? Where does it go? Are you, I guess, reunited with Krishna, or is what happens to your consciousness?
Well, like I mentioned, the consciousness emanates from the Atma. You know, they say the Atma is located in the region of the heart, and the consciousness is spread through the body. So I think what you're really asking is what happens to the Atma when it leaves the body in pure consciousness. So that Atma will go to Krishna. Like we discussed, Krishna is a person, and we are persons. You know, there is a school of thought. In fact, you find it everywhere, in one form or another, that wants, in which the candidate wants to like merge and become one with God, or enter into the void, somehow or other give up his or her individual identity. And that is a type of spiritual suicide. Just give up your individual existence. And that is a sort of natural response to, you know, frustration in the material world. It's not like the gross suicide that we discussed, but it's spiritual suicide, where you want to merge and become one with God, one with the light, or, you know, disappear in the void. But that is not real liberation. Real liberation means to be, it's like if you're diseased and like you suffer. So, say you have a high fever, so you want to bring down the fever. And then you bring down your fever and then just lying in bed. That's not really being cured. Really being cured means you get out of bed and you do normal, healthy activities. So devotional service, bhakti yoga, devotional service, are the normal, healthy activities of a pure, liberated soul. And a pure devotee, he doesn't actually desire liberation because he already is liberated. He doesn't desire to go to Krishna because he's already with Krishna. But generally, when the pure devotee leaves his body, Krishna will bring him to Krishna's abode in the spiritual realm. And there you will engage in loving reciprocation with Krishna. Just like here. Nobody can be happy alone. I mean, you might have $1 billion, but if you have no person to share your life with, you won't be happy. So, in the spiritual sky, Krishna has his abode, and he engages in loving pastimes with his pure devotees. And so when you leave your body in purified consciousness, and there's no more karma, then you go to Krishna.
as we happily surrender to the joy that you have brought us with your knowledge, is there some wisdom or value that you can share with us that we get to do so, so we can carry it with us?
Yes. Well, there's two points that by chanting and following the other principles that we follow here, you can strengthen your consciousness so that consciousness is with you more than it might otherwise be. And the other thing is that Krishna, he's like, you know, he's our origin. And so in a way you could say he's the Supreme Father. And we're like the rebellious children who ran away from home and now we're suffering away from our father. So if we can bring others to Krishna, that pleases Krishna a lot. So that's a very important way to please Krishna. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that those who explain this secret of the Bhagavad Gita, they are my dearmost servants. And in the end, they will come back to me. So that's definitely a characteristic of Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master and his spiritual master, that they worked tirelessly, I mean blissfully, but also tirelessly to bring others back to Krishna. And so if you do that, that will help you to stay in that spiritual realm of devotional service.
That's why we keep coming back to get there.
Yes, exactly. You keep taking birth again and again and again and again until you become Krishna conscious and go back home back to that every day.
So we choose.
Yes. Very good. Yeah, we're pretty stupid. We're pretty stupid. But still, you know, what's done is done, you know. So, it's like we're drowning in the ocean, and then, you know, the devotees come along with a boat to rescue us. So we should just feel happy that the boat has come. I've been so stupid to have jumped into this ocean. That was like so stupid. Well, it was. But now the boat has come. So let's not be too preoccupied with that and let's get on the boat.
But are some souls or people supposed to be here longer to help other people? Like, or to like, or there's so much stuff in there, in my brain, yeah. To help other people, or to like, as a service for the karma, like, to bring people, or to like, it's, I don't know.
No, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. It is said that when a spiritual master accepts a disciple, He promises to deliver that disciple from the material world to Krishna. And even if the disciple is not completely successful in the present lifetime, the spiritual master will come back to deliver that disciple. So, now that is also, that's like a very deep statement. It's a very strong commitment and it's a very deep statement. But he is responsible. Now, when the disciple surrenders to the spiritual master takes responsibility. But even if the spiritual master has left his body and, say, gone to Krishna, because it's everything is personal, you know, it's like between the spiritual master and Krishna, that, okay, they're my disciples, they're still in the material world, they need help. And the spiritual master is certainly willing to come back. But Krishna may say, no, you've been here with me, I'll arrange someone else. So somehow between the spiritual master and Krishna, arrangements are made so that the disciples of the spiritual master will continue to get the guidance they need in order to be completely successful.
He's your spiritual master.
Yes. Yes.
And like, so Srila Prabhupada was pure, so he went back to Godhead. He won't come back to the earth, right? He won't take another body. Once you're with Godhead, he won't come back, right?
Well, you don't fall down into the material world again. But out of compassion, he may come again, and when he does come, he may appear like an ordinary human being, but he's not, because he's coming from Krishna. I mean, he will resemble an ordinary human being, but he won't be an ordinary human being.
But he won't look like Srila Prabhupada. He can't have the same body, right?
No. I mean, it happens very, yeah. Someone who's liberated and who's like, inspired by Krishna, he could recognize him as the same person, but the body will not appear the same. And even otherwise, our bodies are always changing. The body you have now isn't the body you had when you were 5 years old. If we passed around pictures of 2-year-old babies, and one of them was you, be hard for us to guess which of the ones one was you, because our bodies are always changing. All right, well, very good questions, very interesting discussions. So, what next?
We have our feast. It's going to be served up in the cooking classroom. And tonight is the first night of the sacred month of Karti. So from 8 o'clock to 8:40, they're having amazing, beautiful candlelight kirtan, offer candles. The temple will be at least 100 people there. Nice kirtan going on. You said it's forbidden. Now go to 8:40 so we can all go eat and maybe go to that. Okay. Nice. and special benefit for you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Maybe we'll meet next Wednesday. I'll be here. And maybe we'll meet later tonight in the temple.